Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the Shogun Warrior to my No Fun Worrier, it's Dan. I just came up with that like 5 minutes ago. So, Dan, you're connecting with us in a slightly different fashion than normal tonight, is that correct?
Yep, Skype's being a fucking bitch, so here I am using the phone, Skype.
Yeah, we've spent the last several minutes trying to figure out how we can get Dan to still be here, and he's doing it the old-fashioned way via the phone, which is usually the Vicky manner doing things here. So we are back once again to talk about the formidably fun lineup of CW shows, you know, like the 100 or Crazy X. No, we don't do those shows here, damn it. We're here for the superhero talk. And so, as such, we have yet another iteration of our all-star squad with us here tonight. The aforementioned Vicky. Hey, Vicky.
Hey there.
And returning from the land of no electricity, we are again joined by Cade.
Apparently it's 2016 and I should be able to connect to the internet. I just found that out. Hi, everybody.
I like the idea of you at home just hitting Welcome your computer to with a rock.
It's two shells I rub together vigorously. That's how I get my internet connection now.
Awesome. It's like how you make fire.
That explains the noise 2 weeks ago.
Oh, is that what that was? Okay, so although I had been thinking for the last couple days that I've got this little Gotham rage rant that's building up inside of me, I think I'm going to let it fester and ferment one additional week before I unleash it here. So maybe I'll take a 180 degree trip away from that bubbling pit of hate I'm waiting to dive into. And maybe we can head right on over to the brighter and shinier side of life. And we can start off talking about this week's episode of Supergirl. Now, the latest episode was titled Welcome to Earth. Now, in a nutshell, the president is prepared to sign an executive order that grants aliens the same inalienable rights as humans of the US of A. Wow, imagine if a president could actually do such a thing. So, anyway, someone ain't so keen on this happening, and Supergirl and the DEO think that the assassin is the Daxamite that escapes earlier in this episode. Beyond learning about this man from Daxam, we also meet Maggie Sawyer, a cop who seems to have her finger on the pulse of all things alien in National City. And before the hour's up, a couple of other alien secrets are dropped in our laps as well. Now, there's quite a bit to unpack in this one episode, so why not start with the man from Daxam, who we now know for sure is Mon-El. Just for the non-comic book folks out there, Mon-El is a character from the comic books who's actually been around since 1961. I love this. There was actually his first story was about him coming to Earth, and he was mistaken, much like he was here, for a Kryptonian by Superboy. But the story goes, because Superboy suspects that Mon-El is a fraud, so he paints these huge balls of lead green in order to make like they're like fake kryptonite. But what ends up happening, the lead ends up being toxic to Mon-El. And all they can do by the end of the story is put Mon-El in the Phantom Zone, basically to keep him alive until they can come up with a cure for his lead poisoning. So what ends up happening, if I'm not mistaken, is that Mon-El ends up staying in the fucking Phantom Zone for the next 11 centuries.
Yes, yes he does. That's exactly what happens.
Oh my gosh.
Until he's later released, cured, and he becomes a member of the big superhero team of the 31st century that Jason seems to like to mention in every single podcast, the Legion of Superheroes. So, there's a funny back story for that character. So my question for everyone here is kind of a multifaceted one. Well, honestly, do you like what you've seen so far, the addition of this character and this actor to the mix on this show? I mean, do you think he's going to represent, oh God, a possible romantic interest for Kara, possibly? And do you think it's odd that the moment we get to say farewell to Superman, we then get another guy on the show with virtually the same abilities? Cade, I'm going to go to you first because of your Mon-El background as well. What do you think of all that?
Actually, I think it's rather perfect. They found a way to give us another Kryptonian who's a good guy, or a super-powered character without having Superman around. Because if there is an analogous for Superman in DC Universe, and he's been used that way, Mon-El's always been that character. If they couldn't have Superman, he would be the person who stood in, because he's very similar in the way he acts. He has the L name they put on there. I'm not surprised the fact they did it at all. That gives them a chance to go and play with that dynamic some more, having two super-powered characters of the same type power level running around. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure they're going to end up having, like, that's a love interest thing they also added as well, because there's the whole thing she couldn't be with Jimmy because she said, I can't be with him because he doesn't understand what it's like to be me. Oh, along comes this guy who understands what it's like to be super-powered and have all these amazing abilities. And he's handsome, too? Oh, it's perfect. That's ironic. I will say, though, as long as I get Mon-El on Superman, I will accept any contrivances they made up to shove him into the show, because I now have him on the show. So I'm excited about that.
It would be kind of funny if there actually were some ugly Kryptonians who showed up at one point.
They're all beautiful people. It's just a beautiful race, really.
So, Vicky, so I'm wondering, do you think it's going to in any way take away from Supergirl, the character, or the show by having this guy there? Or do you think are you more positive the way Kate is about it?
I'm going to try and be more positive about it. I don't think that they would, it would detract, take away time from Supergirl. He's kind of one of these also just kind of ancillary characters, maybe like, I don't know what they're going to do with him. But they better as heck not make him a laborantist.
Get ready for it.
No, I really don't want them to do that.
Come on, it's the CW. You can't not.
Oh, I know.
It's carved in stone.
I don't want it to happen, but it probably will.
Before Dan, did you have any opinions on this guy, or did you find him kind of just a bore, or what?
It's a little bit too early for me to have much of an opinion on it. I wasn't too thrilled with like Kara's instant racism towards him, because it just felt so out of character and just not cool. I mean, I guess I understand it, but I'm sure that's how you like Brooklynites feel about people in like New Jersey or something. It's just like standard, but you know, I don't know.
Well, she's got to have some flaws.
Yeah,
no, she doesn't.
I thought that was an interesting tack to take. The only explanation for it is it's, you know, what are they speaking, using racism as what you're in a way, I guess, racism has to be learned, so to speak. And if during her time on Krypton, how old was she when she left Krypton? She was like 12. 12. 12
yeah,
13?
I think like 12.
Well, if the understanding is when she was a child on Krypton, that's how she was brought up, and they looked down on the people from Daxam and had this way of thinking about them, you know. So in a way, like, oh, it uncovers that there is a negative trait about her. So I guess that is interesting. But I totally get it kind of being out of left field, because we hadn't seen a hint of that before. But you know, I'm okay with only because I can rationalize it, if that makes any sense. I don't love it, but well, I can rationalize it.
Fortunately, she backed off it by the end of the episode, and we don't have to worry about her voting for Trump L next week. So,
okay, let's not get into politics here.
It's going to be very unlikely. Politics will not get mentioned during the course of this podcast. So. Apologies to you in advance, Vicky. Speaking of politics, oh my gosh, segues. One of the most notable things about this episode, before it even aired, was the fact that we all knew that the original Wonder Woman herself, Linda Carter, was going to be showing up as the President of the United States. Now, putting aside that the writers kind of sort of dropped the ball just a little bit by naming her President Marsden, when they should have just named her Marston, which would have been naming her after the guy who created Wonder Woman 75 years ago. I I'm a little surprised he kind of screwed that one up. But beyond that stunt casting, and also one of the best in jokes I've seen on any of these shows in some time, right now, let's not just talk about how much fun it was, for some of us at least, to see her working again, and she looked pretty good, actually, but also just the entire overall plot line with the aliens, and we can even expand the section, we can talk about the introduction of the Maggie Sawyer character, and even that creature, let's call it the creature cantina, speakeasy, that we see in the middle of town. So, Vicky, I'm going to go to you first on this one, because I was curious to see how you felt about seeing Miss Carter show up on the show, and how you felt about Maggie as well.
Oh, gosh, I was so excited. you know, yeah, no, I was delighted, and it made me so happy to have Linda Carter be the president. And she did not disappoint. She did a great job. I only have positive things to say about her. So I do think that the anti, you know, alien storyline was good, and it was interesting that she was then encouraging, you know, Jean to, you know, be himself when, oh, gee, we turn it. It looks out. Looks like now that she is an alien of some kind now. I also liked to have the introduction of Maggie as this female detective. I'm all, you know, this is one of the best things about this show. It has female characters, and, you know, we had how many female characters introduced in this episode.
Right.
And I just love how many female characters are in this show, because it's so important, I think, because they're not in a lot of other superhero shows taking as active a role, I think,
right,
as in this one. They're not always the focus like this show is. And so I think it's going to be good to have her as one of these recurring characters.
Yeah, I mean, I actually have a vague memory of Maggie Sawyer, so that is a character that's from the comic books as well. So it does have that sort of backstory. But yeah, it's cool because you have all these female characters, but it's never like an overly quote-unquote girly show, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say, yeah.
Because the more that they have strong female characters who aren't there just to in support of or due to a male character, the better it is, just in general. Not just for the show, but just in general. That's kind of been one of the issues that we've had on other shows with certain characters. And so it's nice to see that on this show they can add more to the mix without it feeling like it's just them trying to make a statement about it. They're just naturally added to the show, I think.
Yeah, I was just kind of trying to avoid using the phrase strong female character just because...
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, you're right.
Just because it shouldn't have to be a qualifier for a female character.
It's like seeing an articulate African-American character. It's like, you shouldn't have to say articulate, because when you say that, it sends a wrong message. But how often have you seen something like that being, you know, referred to over time? I just before we move on to the next person here, I just want to get that, make sure we don't forget the line she had, which is like my favorite thing in the whole episode.
Yes.
When I believe it's after Supergirl comments on her excitement about seeing Air Force One, I think that's when she says it, where she says,
yeah,
you should see my other jet. And I was like, oh my god, she made a reference to the invisible jet. That's the most coolest thing ever.
And I also just wanted to say, since we're kind of on the topic of the new female characters, we got to see McGann introduced here at the end of the episode. She was the bartender from the Creature Cantina.
Right. Oh, yeah, we were going to get, that's, well, we're introducing yet another character from comics, cartoons, etc. That's Miss Martian. So that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool in the sense that it means that we're going to get more storylines that are going to revolve around John Jones, because being, it's kind of like now that, and it's also an interesting parallel that Supergirl now has this other fellow person who's the, one of the last survivors or the last survivor of a Krypton or Krypton-like planet. And now John meets another fellow survivor from Mars. So it's kind of a, there's a kind of a parallel going on there, I think. I don't think there's going to be a love thing there. That would be make me uncomfortable.
No, that's yeah.
I'm kind of hoping that, I don't remember her story, so I don't think they're actually related. I just guess they're from, of the same race.
Well, I think in, this is kind of only just what I know from watching Young Justice, but she was like his niece.
In the cartoon, well, she claims to be his niece.
Well, yeah.
Miss Martian is actually a white Martian, where John is a green Martian.
That's right.
So she's like actually of the race that subjugated and killed his people.
Wow, we're getting into politics and race on this show. So it's the most controversial SDVD since the a month ago. Anyway, Danny, was there anything about I think you might have more to say about just the alien storyline in general. I was kind of curious what you thought of like the little creature bar and stuff like that, because you know I know you're our resident sci-fi guy, so whenever they get a little bit more into that kind of stuff on the show, I think it's intriguing that they go that way.
I was more confused than anything because I've only seen like 6 episodes of the show. I'm like, holy shit, there's a lot of aliens on Earth in this this show. So I was I was just surprised that there's like so many different kinds of aliens there, because I mean, you know, I didn't know there was more than a few different examples of it. So I guess I might have to go in and see what happened in season one, because there must be a lot of shit going on. And if there's like a whole department to like deal with aliens, I mean, it obviously wasn't just made up to deal with like 2 Kryptonians and a Martian and like 3 other people. So.
How to get funding
but
for
it,
that?
But it was cool. But it was cool. They did some fun stuff, and you know the dude with the eye in his forehead. I'm like, I wonder if that's the old version of the guy in the Will of Real Martian Please Stand Up Twice on episode. But it's not, of course, but
but it's fun to think that. That's cool. Yeah, I think yeah. Last season we saw like either be on view screens or the DEO would have different aliens that were being kept under lock and key at some point. So we knew that there were any number of races running around Earth. So it was kind of like a very wannabe Men in Black kind of a thing, but not nearly as without the budget or anything like that.
And I've enjoyed the new characters that were introduced. Seem to be cool. I'm a little concerned that there's going to be too many female characters, and as a male, I'm feeling kind of threatened, like I'm under attack, and it's kind of unfair. So I don't know.
I mean,
as long as they introduce white female characters, it'll be okay. But.
I don't know. Miss Martian looks like she's one of those other people. So anyway, we just lost 2 more listeners. Anyway, so beyond that, and since now that we have covered Miss Martian a little bit, was there anything else that we wanted to cover about this? I mean, whether it be stuff about John or maybe one of the lesser things about the episode, such as like the actual alien threat, who apparently was named Scorcher, although I was pretty sure she was this other villain named Volcana. So I don't know or don't really care. It's like, oh, look, I'm yet another character who can do flamey stuff. I'm getting kind of burned out on the flame stuff, and that is an unintentional pun, but whatever. Is there anything else that anyone feels is worth mentioning, or should we actually go right to the scoring on this episode?
I want to point out I'm enjoying Wynn being at the DEO
a
lot more than he was at CatCo, because he isn't like looked down or people don't forget who he is. He's like a vital part of the team now. They make him interact. They go up like, hey, can you do this? Instead of like, can someone fix this? I could be able to do that. I like that, how they moved him over. It's a much better place for him, for his character to shine and be like what the character should be.
I have to agree. What was he like supposed to be considered, like the IT guy at CatCo? Is that what
yeah,
he
yeah.
Although he didn't like sit in a separate IT department, as I've seen in other companies like that, much like the ones I've worked at, whatever, he kind of sat in the middle of everybody else, which didn't make a lot of sense. But then again, maybe I shouldn't get hung up on stuff like that, because a lot of stuff at that office doesn't make a lot of sense the more I think about it. So I do agree. It seems like they're putting him more to use because they made him out to be kind of a fun, geeky character last season, and now they're really utilizing him. And like we said in a previous podcast, I think he kind of fills that Felicity Cisco kind of role on the show to a certain extent. Some obviously Felicity plays a stronger role on Arrow than the others, but the same kind of the off the cuff remark kind of person, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. So, oh, sweet. We covered that one so quickly. I'm so happy. And Snapper still being a dick. So, which is it? But I like that. I really like that. Because it's a different kind of dick on this show. So
I will point out, though, that Kara was the one doing the bolstering up this episode with Jimmy. Instead of usually she's the one who needs that. So
that's true. And I was kind of hoping she would tell him, you know what you should do? You should leave the show because you're really useless now. But and plus, why is Jimmy Olsen taller than Superman? But anyway. it really sucks. I mean, I like that actor, but and I was okay with the idea of him being Jimmy Olsen at first, but the more I think about Jimmy Olsen for the last several decades, I never felt he ever did anything that made me think, oh, Jimmy Olsen. And it's got nothing. I don't care what race Jimmy Olsen is. I don't care if he was Mongolian. I just wanted him to be a more. I never got the impression this is Superman's best friend or pal watching this show. It still has yet to work. It's a minor thing, but it still doesn't really work for me very well.
He's just kind of eh. He's not like, you know, geeky. He's not like charming. He's just kind of like fucking there.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
I agree. It's, you know, yeah. It's too bad that he wasn't the one who couldn't work in Canada, and we could have kept Callista Flockhart and lost him instead, because he's, I mean, maybe they're going to find a way to do more with him being in charge of CatCo, except if she's going to be a reporter working for Snapper, then how much exposure is she going to have, you know, a couple floors up anyway? So I really feel like they're greasing the skids to get rid of him anyway. So I don't know. I guess we'll see. But it seems like if he's Jimmy Olsen, he should be at the Daily Planet with Lois Lane and Clark Kent. It just doesn't make sense that he's here anyway. Okay. So I'm glad we spent a couple minutes to dump on Jimmy Olsen. So let's get to the grading of this episode. Vicky, what was your grade for this episode of Supergirl?
I'm going to give it a 3.5.
Okay. Cade?
I'll give it a 4.
Ooh, 4. Look at you. I'm anticipating something negative from Dan. Dan? Where did you come down on this one?
I just got a 3. I didn't quite enjoy it as much as last week. The, you know, alien attack flop was kind of, you know, kind of generic-ish, so it didn't really do a lot for me, but there is some stuff that helped. Plus, I was intrigued by the ending, even though I don't know much about John's backstory and what's going on with that. I know enough, but I found it just like, okay, they can do something interesting with this. So that might have brought it up a little bit higher than it would have been otherwise. So,
right. 3. I am going to give it a 3.5 myself. I do agree about the villain being rather generic. I wish there had been a bit more to it. I'm probably letting my surprise, not surprise, because I knew she was going to be on it. Probably the fact that I haven't seen Linda Carter in several decades in anything. Probably that gives it the extra half point for me. Also, do want to mention, I also thought that Supergirl doing a spin to when she was trying to put out the fire during that scene, I thought that was also doing a little bit of an homage to the famous Wonder Woman spin from the TV show of the 70s, which is always like, because that's how she changed her outfit.
Yeah.
I always thought, why does Wonder Woman never get dizzy? But anyway, so I will give it a 3.5. Okay, so next up on our roster of shows, we have a long-awaited episode at least by the longtime comic book fans of the show, of The Flash. Now, this episode was somewhat intriguingly titled The New Rogues. Now, let's see, we do get to meet a couple new villains. We get to meet the Earth One version of Mirror Master, as well as The Top. We also get to see Jesse Quick in her new Flashy outfit. Team Flash tries to pluck a replacement Wells from the multiverse. Caitlin is feeling just a little bit more frosty this week. And, well, Joe, Barry, and Iris, I don't know, either they tiptoe or just plain ignore, you know, just why Daddy West might feel just a little bit squeamish seeing Barry and Iris in any lip locks. So let's dive right into this episode with this week's metas. I guess that's how they refer to him on the show. Especially since Mirror Master is possibly the most anticipated villain we've been waiting to see, I would say, since after season one ended, because that season they rolled out so many iconic Flash villains and rogues. So, curious to see what we thought of this version of the Mirror Master, and as well as his little partner in crime, the Top. So, I'll take a step back, because I'm anticipating some fun for the next several minutes. I'm actually going to go with Dan first, because Dan does not have the whole comic book bullshit, you know, to cloud his judgment or anything. So he's going to give us the straight scoop on what he thought of this villain.
All right. After our podcast from at some point last year, or maybe it was 2016, who fucking cares? I was interested to see what this character ended up being like. It's not one that I'm familiar with from, you know, any of my flirting around with DC Comics, but listening to you three guys talk about your favorite villains and who you're looking forward to seeing and stuff, and it's like, okay, this guy has some potential. And then I watched this episode, and it just fucking sucked. I mean, the guy couldn't act. He had no, like, charisma. His plan was, like, garbage. His, like, backstory was just, you know, the same generic thing we've seen a zillion times. I could see potential for some cool stuff, but just the character is just, bleh. I mean, just not cool. I mean, the Top wasn't impressive either, and then they had some, like, chemistry-less relationship between the two of them for some reason, and, of course, they had, like, a, you know, five-second on-screen crime spree that we, you know, got to see stuff going. So while there was some cool stuff that I enjoyed, like, you know, running through mirrors and jumping around and Barry and, like, you know, running up into the sky going after him, that was cool, but that could have been done with, like, you know, any other kind of villain. But I was way, way underwhelmed, and at this point it just kind of feels like they took a character that you guys said that should be cool and just completely fucked it up. So I mean, there's a big multiverse, so maybe they can have, like, an interesting version of Mirror Master with, like, somebody that can act and, like, an outfit that isn't, like, the lamest fucking outfit imaginable, the cheapest, shittiest, like, 1993 suit. But it's, I mean, I just, you know, I was, you know, I guess maybe you guys had me expecting something, like, awesome, and this is just not awesome in any way. So I'm interested to see if, how you guys can, rationalize you're looking forward to seeing somebody running into mirrors enough to make up for all of my shit talk.
So happy we started off for you. Cade.
Because I can't imagine that the character in the comics acts anything like this, or you guys, I just couldn't see you guys being excited to, like, see some schlub that, like, you know, doesn't like Leonard Snart, wants to rob a couple things. And that's it. Being something that you'd be looking forward to.
I'll let Cabe go now and see what he has to say. And for all I know, he might be more in sync with you than I would have suspected. So let's see, Cade, what was your take as we on the other side of the aisle?
The first thing I want to point out, Dan, as much as you hate that suit, if he had worn Mirror Master's actual helmet, that would have been dumber than what he wore in that episode. One of the dumbest comic suits is Mirror Master's. I don't like his whole suit, period. Bad colors, and that helmet is dumb.
See, I actually thought As far as, because he was, cause I, you know, he's wearing basically this multi-piece suit. You know, I actually thought it was a nice suit myself, but what do I know?
I like
I
the suit, but I'm just saying the helmet is dumber.
Well, no, but I thought the joke in the show.
I like the movie The Wedding Singer. I just don't want to dress like that. So,
well, I didn't think it was a '90s suit. I thought the joke was I thought the joke was having the character dress that well because he's has one of the most notoriously disliked outfits in DC comic book history.
Yeah.
Between the combination of the stupidest headgear of any comic book character ever. Although let's be honest, there are a few different Flash villains who have notoriously bad or dopey That's looking true. Outfits. I mean, in fact, I would even say your big three iconic superheroes with the best villain collections, which tend to be Batman, the Flash, and Spider-Man, and you can pick your order as to which is the best. I could any one of those three could be number one there. They each have at least a couple villains there where you look at their outfits like, really? Really?
True.
You know, they do. Captain Boomerang's dressed like a freaking flight attendant with boomerangs all over his outfit. It looks
God.
But anyway, back to... Anyway, I just thought they were making a joke about that. Because even the color scheme was always ugly, like orange and green.
It's bad. I actually like the way he dressed here. I like they moved away from trying to do the comic book suit of Sam Scudder, just giving him the suit, making him... I preferred this a lot more.
Can we point out, before you say another word, that we just spent all this time talking about his outfit, and Jason's not even here. Because Jason's usually the first one to start talking about outfits, even before I do. I just realized we just did that. We just went pure...
I don't know what the character...
Yeah, we went pure comic book geek.
I haven't seen what the comic book character looks like. I'm just like, okay, this guy is supposed to be some badass villain that you guys just like think is really cool, and he's just like dressed like he's going to like be one of the judges on Chopped, so...
You know also, what he did? Yes.
It is the first episode. The anyway, first time seeing him. We can't judge, period. I really like what we got of Mirror Master so far. Seeing him use the mirror, seeing him be someone who, on his first episode, outsmarted the Flash and trapped him in a mirror, has a way to get away from Flash, which most people can't do. He had a lot of the things that made Mirror Master one of my favorite Flash villains actually show up in the episode. The acting may not have been the best, but hey, I'm not looking for that. He presented Sam Scudder in a way that I wanted Mirror Master to be presented. He gives me hope for when they bring him back. It should be interesting because he's always going to have something. And if he starts to learn his powers more, you have more chances of interesting things to happen. I also want to talk about the top. I think this is one of the more interesting ways they've taken a power that doesn't exist for the character in the comic, but worked it better for TV than her just spinning around. Yeah. Like it would have been. This was an interesting twist. The way they gave her a power here, I enjoyed her power here. I didn't realize I said it. I enjoy her power set in the show. It works a lot better than if they had just made her spin around, because it's like that's just not going to do anything for me there. But I'm.
It was a very cool visual effect. I liked it. I mean, I liked what I saw from that.
I definitely want to see more of them. I'm not going to judge how, I'm not going to say this one episode they were perfect, but I see a lot of potential for some more fun when they show back up.
Actually, before I say, I mean, Vicky, did you want to say anything before? I don't want to necessarily say anything just yet. If you want to comment.
Yeah, no, I'll just say that I did like Mirror Master. I was not a fan of the top. I thought the name was a little stupid. But hearing
go on.
Wow.
Of all the characters we've had, it's the top whose name is stupid.
But hearing Kate talk about it, it's grown on me. So okay. I'm siding with Kate on this.
You know, because technically the name The Flash is kind of stupid if you really think about it.
I know.
The top is really perfect. It was such a perfect descriptor of what the character was. He spun around like a top. I mean.
Yeah, that's really what he does. He's one of the rogues, but he's one of the, I don't want to say the lamer rogue. Nah, I will say he's one of the lamer
rogues. Second tier rogues, yeah.
Yeah, and I understand why they chose... First of all, I like the fact that they changed the gender on that character. I was like, okay, that's totally a character you can change and make into something different, and I'll be happy about it, because he's kind of a bore. And if you just had a character who just spun around, whizzing around, that would just be like a very bad version of a new speedster. We've got enough speedsters running around on the show. We're even going to get more. We don't need yet a spinning one. So I'm glad they went that route. As far as Mirror Master is concerned, you know what? On one hand, to a certain degree, I do see where Dan is coming from, because especially since when we did our top five anticipated or favorite villains or whatever it was we did some time ago, Mirror Master was definitely on all of our lists, because he was always one of the top tier rogues who was always there with, you know, Captain Cold and Boomerang and all those guys. So unless they really had knocked it out of the park, it would have been difficult to live up to even our own, the hype that we created ourselves there. I would say maybe he might have been better if they'd given him a chance to do a little bit more. And maybe this is where it goes to Cade saying it's only the first time we see him. Maybe in subsequent appearances they can do more of them. I actually liked the whole revenge on Snart kind of a thing, because, you know, with the back in the days of the rogues stabbing each other in the back all the time, and the fact that they were about to kill each other just when the particle accelerator went off, well, I thought was kind of interesting, because they also had to address the fact that no one knows where Snart is. So we didn't get our dream of having Flashpoint make him alive after all. Here's the thing, with Flash villains specifically, although I could actually apply this to Spider-Man villains and Batman villains too, you know, outside of like the joke, whatever. You have to remember that when you're dealing with villains that are not like cosmic villains, they're not villains of like a super team or Superman or anything like that. Generally speaking, most of their motivations are they rob stuff. They're all just basically robbers and thieves with abilities or gadgets. And it's up to the writers and the actors to make them more interesting. I mean, that's all the Riddler is. That's all the Penguin is. That's all Captain Cold and whatever all these guys are. And that's all Mirror Master has ever been. He's never had, in the comics, he's never, at least the Sam Scudder version, he's never had pretensions of being anything more of that. You know, I think we've always enjoyed him, you know, because there's something a bit goofy about him, but also Mirror, who picks mirrors as a gadget? But once they start getting in the comics, once they start getting into the wackiness of being able to knock people into like a mirror universe, and you know, that also makes me think of Star Trek, but just the coolness of that, it makes him a bit more interesting. Was he super interesting here? No, but I kind of felt that there was enough other stuff in the episode, so he wasn't like such a major focus of the episode. If the whole episode had just been about this, I would have been like, really, that's it? But we had enough other things going on that I felt it held its weight enough in this episode. But if they bring him back, I do hope they do a lot more. And I'm super, super, super intrigued by something Wells said in the episode, which is what I'm really looking forward to. Do you guys remember what I'm talking about? Kay, Dan, Eddie, do you remember what he said?
No, I don't.
When they're naming him, and that's also a very funny moment, when Wells names him Mirror Master, he refers to the fact there is a Mirror Master on his planet, only he's not a meta, he's just a guy who uses a mirror gun, and I think he even names him, I think he says it's Evan McCullough. That's the modern day Mirror Master. The guy who's been Mirror Master for the past 15 years or so. I can't remember when they first invented that character, whatever. So if there's a non-meta on Earth 2 with a mirror gun, maybe he's running around in an orange and green outfit. So
yeah, very possible.
So maybe we might get the Mirror Master we really wanted, as opposed to the chopped judge. God, now I can't get that description out of my head.
I'm just kind of worried that they're not going to be able to, you know, that they have a character they could have done something cool with, and they're just never going to get it right. So I mean, this is, it's early on, so we'll see if I'm right and they squandered the potential, or you know, or if you guys are, you know, your optimism is well-founded, and they'll, you know, the character will become, I don't know, more of a threat instead right. of just kind of like a, yeah.
I think I'm trying to give them slack because of how good of how an unexpectedly good job they've done with other villains that I really didn't expect them to do well. I mean, like Grodd, for example. I never dreamed they'd pull off Grodd, and I don't mean just the special effect, just to make that an interesting character on a TV show. Or Captain Cold, for, you know, which I thought was going to be horrible on this TV show, and he's been a great character throughout all these series. So in a way, I'm actually, again, seeing your point, because part of me is almost surprised that they couldn't have done even more with this character, but I'm hoping it's just a first appearance situation, and I'm just going to go with the, I liked him well enough, but oh, I hope they do so much more with that character. Otherwise, then you're right. Then they will have squandered one of the biggest rogues there is, in at least in the Flash comic books. I'm going to be thinking about for the rest of the podcast, who else is left for them to do? I know there's a few more. Oh, okay. So I want to shut up. So let's talk about the Wells family a little bit. Because we got a lot of Wells stuff in this episode. Jesse Quick learning the ropes, and then all the stuff with Harry or Harrison or whatever his name is, or HR. So, Vicky, I'm going to go to you first, because I'll give you more to say here. What did you think of everything with Jesse and her dad in this episode?
I thought it was really good. The stuff between Cisco and Wells was just hilarious. All their little barbs at each other. What was it? I think Wells called Cisco Jack Wagon. Oh my gosh, that was. But it was a little weird just seeing these different personalities for Wells's from the alternate Earths. It's going to be very weird having a seemingly very nice Wells, because we're so used to the pseudo evil and then just the cranky Wells around. And then the stuff with Jesse and was it Wally was interesting. I don't know. I think they're cute together. So, so yeah. But it was interesting to see that, you know, Wells was okay, so we'll find you another one of me. And then he seems to get jealous all of a sudden.
Yeah. That was one of my favorite aspects of that storyline, was him suggesting it. And he's the one who, like, but he doesn't seem to want any of them to be the guy. I thought that was kind of an interesting
yes. take on. Yeah.
I also think that the Wells at the end of the picking, that's probably the guy closest in personality to Tom Cavanaugh himself. Because Tom Cavanaugh, if you follow him on Twitter or Instagram, whatever, you know, or ever listen to him, he's just a big goofball. So it's kind of funny seeing this guy. Dan, what was your take on that stuff?
I'm not quite so sure about the new Wells. His look is a little bit strange. It's kind of like, I don't know, he looks like Mr. Slave or somebody. But you know, but there's definitely potential, and anytime we have more Tom Cavanaugh on the show, it's good. Jesse's costume is pretty sweet, and I'm enjoying what they're doing with her, even though Wally is just like, you know, he doesn't have any game when it comes to relationship type stuff, and him friend zoning Jesse for like half the episodes. it made me slap my head and just like, you stupid fucking moron. But there's some good stuff there.
Did you notice there seemed to be like a running theme throughout the entire episode of couples? Because, you know, you had the Barry Iris stuff, you had the Mirror Master in the top, you had Jesse and Wally. And speaking of lame, can we say like father, like son? Because Joe and District Attorney Horton, and I'm like, dude, what's wrong with you? Oh, I was about to make a really inappropriate joke. I'm glad I stopped myself. But anyway, but Dan, I had to say, there. I'm watching this episode, and I mean, I appreciate that you, and I love that you are, when you're grading these at the end of each episode, you're not taking any prisoners. You know that they have to really earn your points here. But part of me thought there was a moment in this episode, a reference I made, it's like, oh, maybe that might have just got them half a point from Dan. I don't know. I don't know if they bought a little bit of a vote there. Not only do they make you want to say it because it's your thing.
Oh, yeah. So the very specific production information from Twin Peaks helped my rating of the episode.
But the fact that what made that awesome was not only describing what they did, but it might be one of the only times I've heard them describe that character as the actual full name, the man from the other place, another place, as opposed to like, oh, the dwarf or something. I was like, oh my God, that's right. I think that's how he was listed in the credits, like man from another place. Is that how he was credited?
Yep, that's perfect. Everything was right on there.
It totally made me want to go back and watch that, and like, you know, watch it. Like, that gum you like is coming back in style, or whatever that was. It's been a long time.
Yep.
Kay, before we move on, is there anything you wanted to say? Well, there's got to be something you want to say about the Wells stuff, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm glad we're getting some more Tom Cavanaugh, although I'm not sure how I like this new super-friendly Wells. Not that I think he's bad, but he's a little grating on my nerves, the way he talks and everything, so I'm like, I don't know, I'm gonna push up on that. Jesse's outfit may be one of my favorite suits they put together for any of these shows.
It was a good suit, you're right.
It was really good, and it also had more like the bigger lightning bolt on the side compared to the one that Barry has on his suit, closer to sometimes when they have the larger lightning bolts on the Flash costume. It looked similar enough to his, but very different, and it just looked really good. And that was something I was a little worried about. How is her suit going to look? But it looked fantastic. They've gotten really good at getting some of these suits down.
Even the mask is awesome. Like, the whole thing is just freaking sweet.
It's a domino mask that looks good, as opposed to what they put on some other characters. I'm like,
Black Canary.
Along so many other places. But you get it perfect here. I mean, come on.
Oh, I didn't notice. What color boots did she have? No, I'm just kidding. I kid the boots. I kid.
I did notice, and they weren't yellow, so.
But this outfit is one that they largely created for the TV show, or is it based on? I can't remember.
No, I don't recall anyone ever having a suit similar to that. I think this is a very TV show version of the suit they made.
Cool. I also liked it a lot. Okay, I brought it up before in the description. I got to just make a comment about it now, because I would be remiss not to comment on this. Oh, God help me. Okay, so the Barry, Iris, Joe storyline in this episode. I was a little frustrated by it. Not because I didn't understand it. Of course I understood it, and yeah, Barry, you should move out, but I kept thinking, no one's going to say it. They don't want to actually say what the issue is here, because they don't want to make the show any more weird or creepy or uncomfortable or controversial or whatever, but I kept thinking Joe should say, just a week ago, Joe referred to Barry as his second daughter. That's why he didn't have to do it. So why wouldn't he have said, it's like, because I brought both of you up. So it's kind of like seeing my son and daughter making out, because that's what the problem is. And no one's, and I got frustrated with Iris, because, and they've done such a good job with her character from last season going into this season, that she would not be cognizant of that. Like, how, you don't realize why your dad might be just a little bit off-put by this? By most people might be, actually, but especially your father? It's one of those things I think they just wanted to dodge the bullet, and maybe once upon a time they could have come up with a way to redo this whole storyline so they wouldn't have this issue, but this is what you came up with, guys, and now you're stuck with it. And you didn't, and I don't get the impression you flashpointed this away. So, That's. I just wanted to say that. I don't know if anyone else feels a need to bash them for this, but I was very annoyed by it.
Yeah, I
think it's time that they could have spent to develop Mirror Master like in a better way than than this, because it's just. I mean, would any of us have given any thought to it if they never talked about this and Joel just like didn't give a fuck about them kissing every now and then? I don't think any of us would have really been like, oh, why didn't they explain that? Why doesn't Joel have a problem with that?
I agree. I would have if they hadn't gone through so much trouble to call attention to it and then never make a comment about it, then why do it at all? Because the only thing you end up with is, oh, Barry's deciding to move out. Well, what is Barry's? What, 25, 26? I'm never really clear what his age is.
Mid 20s, yeah. Mid 20s.
But he's a freaking CSI at the police department, so he's pulling down some decent money. Maybe time to move out of your stepfather or whatever. He's not stepfather, adopted father's house already. Yeah, get your own place, dude.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, I'm from Wisconsin. Cade's from Louisiana. So, I mean, we're used to seeing this kind of intra-family intimacy. So I don't think,
it does happen.
Hey, you know what?
Fuck yeah.
The one thing that we don't comment on the show, but maybe I'll just do it for once here. I have to like the fact that on the show, the idea that you have these interracial things is not even, you don't even bat an eye at. Whether it's Barry and Iris or it's Jesse and Wally, I like the fact that they do that, and it's not an issue whatsoever, and it shouldn't be, not in this day and age. But I like that they do that on the show. So felt like
it's pretty nice. I've been watching Deep Space Nine with my kids lately, and I'm like, oh, Captain Sisko can only date black chicks. Okay, good job, 90s.
he found the one black female human in the whole side of the galaxy. Anyway, so. I know there might be a thing or two else that we haven't mentioned, so let me just throw it out there. Does anyone want to say anything about Caitlin and what's going on with her? Cade?
Yep.
I don't want this story to drag out, but I do like that she's very apprehensive about it, because that tells us one thing, that was not erased. They did have an interaction with Killer Frost, and she's afraid of becoming that character. So she's not giving into her powers. She's trying to never use them. She's only used it in this episode because it was the only way to free Barry. But they can't drag this out all season. It's got to come out sooner than later. Otherwise, when they try to drag things out, it's bad. We've seen it.
Oh, God.
When they get to the point, things work out. The stories are pretty good when they just go, let's have this move here. Plus, if we get to, if she they realize it, they can help her find ways to deal with it. They can make her be a hero as opposed to falling into being a villain.
Dan, did you want to comment on it as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they'll address this, in the next 2 or 3 weeks. I can't really imagine them going too much farther past that, just the way they're progressing the storyline. But this whole season, I've been kind of wondering, I always wonder, they're in a lab. Why the fuck is Caitlin wearing a short dress and high heels every fucking week in a lab that gets invaded by bad guys every single week? So yay 2016, good job. But I also noticed how she's been really, really, really dark red lipstick. So I'm like, oh, okay, her lips are turning blue. So I guess at least that makes sense to me now. So I'm interested to see what they can do with this. And her character's been so withdrawn this season as she, I guess, tries to control this kind of crap. Where it'll be nice to see her be able to do something again. That isn't mooning over Ronnie or any of that kind of stuff. So hopefully they'll be able to give her something interesting to do just let the actress do some shit.
Yeah, because she's a very likable actress. We liked her a lot in the early goings of season one, going into season two. But sometimes it's just too evident that they just don't know what to do with her, and they don't utilize her as much as they should, and they really should. I feel there's no excuse for it, and it does bug me from time to time. With this storyline, I had a bit of a concern okay, let's not go down the Sisko rabbit hole again, where Sisko is having these powers and he chooses not to tell anyone about it for half a season, and he keeps having these little experiences to himself. but I realize it makes more sense for her to be frightened about it because she has encountered her doppelganger, Killer Frost. And so she does immediately think that having these powers it links to becoming evil. Why she would actually think she'd become evil, I'm not sure, especially since she's, you know, a biologist or whatever, but whatever. I also kept wondering, really? She would cut off her hair? She wouldn't? Oh, right. But anyway.
Yeah, that's... No one's going to notice. My hair starts... When her hair gets real short, people are going to start to wonder.
She'd dye your hair. Jeez. Anyway, okay. So
let's... Vicky, you think anything about this?
No, I think I pretty much agree with what you guys have said. Pretty covered it well.
Right. So let's move on to the grade portion. So that would be where I'd be asking Vicky. Vicky, what was your grade for this episode of The Flash?
I am going to give it a 3.5 with, you know, a little bump for having Snart in there. So.
Who we didn't even mention much that we got to see him again. That's kind of funny. We kind of just glossed over that. Could have been a flash.
Well, he wasn't really utilized like in any significant way. So
yeah.
I'd call it a wasted opportunity. But...
I call it a masterful opportunity because it motivated the character. I'm just kidding. Gabe, what's your grade on it?
I'll give it three and a half.
3.5 as well. Dan.
I'll give it two and a half. There's enough where enough stuff. I liked that worked in the episode that it made up for my perceived considerable flaws with the new rogues and their lack of roguishness.
Well, due to my abject adoration of said new rogues and I'm just fucking. I'm gonna go with the masses on this one, and also give it a 3.5. Yeah, that's where I am at. The Twin Peaks reference alone. Plus, I also want to have an episode where they make sure they get the guys who do the Orphan Black effects, and I want an episode where it's nothing but just multiple wells throughout the entire episode. I want, there's like 52 or at least 52 Earths. I want 52 versions of Wells all in one episode. So that's Dear Flash Producers. That's what I want. Okay. So let's move on from The Flash and let's get ready to talk about Arrow. Now, the latest episode of Arrow was titled Penance. Simply put, in this episode, Lila had asked Oliver to help break John out of military prison. Felicity is against it, due, I guess, to it being against John's actual wishes, plus all the felonies Ollie would be committing. Although she seems to ignore the fact that it's Lila asking Ollie to do this, and her getting caught up in what he's doing being against the law when being a vigilante who's killed a number of people over... Anyway, I'm sorry. This is a description. Shouldn't be going off on Felicity now. Meanwhile, after a rather sad attempt to stop him, the new team is left to keep Star City safe from the likes of Tobias Church, while Ollie goes to get his former right-hand man out of the can. A few other things to talk about in this episode as well, and we'll get to what we might deem Bravo-worthy as we go along. But I think let's first dig into the whole Diggle escape plot. Obviously, I just let a little bit of my feelings known about what aspect I thought was pretty dumb. And I will also point out to our listeners who might watch other shows that were on this week, I think it's kind of an unfortunate coincidence that on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they also had an attempted prison breakout this week. So I kind of had a compare and contrast in my mind. But I'm more curious about what you guys thought of this whole storyline, you know, how it was executed. Did Felicity really have a right to complain about everything and so on? So I would actually like to go to Dan first on this one to get his take. I really want to hear what you have to say about Felicity more than anything else, but just overall what I'm talking about here.
Oh, the escape plot, we're going with that first?
Yeah.
Okay. It didn't really wow me. I thought it was kind of cool the way they flew out of there at the end, but for the most part, I found it to be kind of, you know, inoffensive, but... You know, not annoying, or I mean, if they had dragged it on for more than an episode or two past that, I would have definitely got sick of it. But I'm kind of, I mean, glad the way they resolved it and just got it over and done with. And I enjoyed the way the, I mean, it was kind of exciting watching that happen at the same time as the other, you know, the rest of his team fighting Chad Siegelman, because he's fucking awesome. Yeah, I enjoyed.
They did a lot of nice cross cutting during that. That's true, right?
Yeah, and that heightened the tension for me. So, you know, it wasn't bad. It wasn't terrible. I'm okay with they don't have another break into a prison plot the rest of the season, but they got her done.
But what about the Felicity stuff? Because I know how it made me angry. So I was curious if it bothered you at all.
Well, I didn't really see much any of her boyfriend this week, so I can't really complain.
the weird, goofy cop guy, right?
Her character was behaving a little bit inconsistently, I think, and it just kind of felt uneven. Just the way she was just mismanaging the team kind of poorly and just not, I mean, just was, you know, I mean, you could, obviously the character was upset about this, you know, her conflict with Ragman and her having, like, you know, having to make the impossible decision and stuff, which I'm glad that they kind of resolved that.
Right.
And which worked okay for me, but I can definitely see why there'd be concerns with her.
I did not get her going off on Ollie about the whole thing, and that just, it seemed like she was just ignoring or ignorant of the facts which had happened right in front of her, and her arguments just were thin, if not out and out stupid for her. I found it very irritating. It looked like forced conflict to me, and I didn't get it. I didn't believe it. I didn't like it. Obviously, by the end of the episode, oh, it's all okay after all, which makes it even that much more pointless. I thought that was like, it felt like old Arrow crap being forced into this episode, which I could have done without personally. Vicky, did you have any feelings about how they handled that, or just the getting Diggle out of prison stuff?
I was not a big fan of it. I thought it was incredibly stupid that they were just going to break him out of prison and just not even bother trying to maybe prove him innocent or whatever. I thought it was very stupid, because then now he's a wanted criminal, he's on the run, and that's just going to create a whole new set of problems. So,
interesting.
It was nice that they name dropped Roy too, and, like, you know, Roy wasn't into that shit. You shouldn't either. So, I mean, it was just, you know, a little bit of continuity that I appreciate.
Yeah,
that's true. I hadn't even thought about that. I wasn't. Yeah, but Roy was into using drugs. Shut up. Oh, anyway. Kay, do you have any feelings on this before we move on?
Honestly, I feel like Felicity's sudden moral issue just seems to be one of the problems the show does have with characters, how they're up and down, how they view things should be. Most of the time, they're not consistent in what they feel is right or wrong. That's one of the problems that's plagued this show. My biggest problem was, it's one of those, it's a specific thing. The spray that they stole, the deatomizing spray or whatever, is in a can, and it's a mist, which Oliver and Diggle are just roaming around in, having a blast. It melts concrete, but they are letting it touch their skin like nothing's a problem. Come on, guys. I know you're a TV show, and you have a guy who's made of mystical rags, but could you at least think that one through for 5 seconds and maybe make it something different? Also, I'm not sure how they got latched onto the jet at the big jet, the plane at the end. That seemed a little, where did it happen? How did they suddenly get hooked up with it? But,
that was magic.
I mean, it is magic, by the fact that they thought, let's have a prison break storyline in an era where we break them out of a military jail. This is one of the dumbest things. I don't know. It's bad enough that they started that storyline, but this is how they get him out of it right now. It's, guys, why? Why do you put yourselves in dumb situations that you have to do dumb things to get yourselves out of with the writing sometimes on here? Yeah. That's all I have to say about it.
I would.
Yeah, come on, Speedweed, get your fucking head out of your ass.
I wouldn't get really all that hung up about the spray thing. Otherwise, I kind of would have to agree with that, generally speaking. And also, yeah, I hate to say it, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. did a much better job of dealing with trying to break someone out of prison this week than they did on Arrow. So there's that. So, going back to Star City, we spent some more time with that team. And I know I did like the fact we were getting to hear their code names being used. So we actually get to hear that Evelyn being referred to as Artemis and Curtis is referred to as Mr. Terrific. And we get a little bit more face time with the DA, Adrian Chase. And it didn't occur to me until this episode that Adrian Chase is actually the secret identity of the 80s version hero of Vigilante. Who, just for the comic book people out there, not to be confused with the cowboy hero who rode a motorcycle with the same superhero name who had been around for several decades before him. There's something I'm a little confused by there. I don't know if I should even mention it. I don't want to, or not, or maybe I'll wait till a little bit later in the podcast. I'll hold off on that. But we also dealt more with the aftermath of, like, what Dan had been mentioned, Felicity telling Rory that she was responsible for dropping Damien Dark's missile on his hometown and all that stuff. So, do we have more thoughts on, you know, these lower tiered heroes on the team and how that story played out with the team with Quentin Lance? We actually got to see him do something, you know, Felicity, and how much fun do we feel Tobias Church really is or not? Kate, I'll let you lead off this time.
I like the team so far. I like their personalities. I don't know how many more episodes I can handle Wild Dog not doing what Oliver says and being the rebel before I'm like, he has to be off the team. They have to decide if that's going to be constant and he's gone, or they're going to fix that. That's one of those problems. It's like every episode, he's the problem. The other two are just fine. They're doing their part. But it was interesting to see them all come together and work together to go do something they pretty much felt probably was a suicide mission, it almost seemed. But they went in, they did the part of trying to be heroes, even though Oliver wasn't there. Which I think is one of the good, it's one of the things that's going to make them, because they went as a team. They made the choice, they all went in, and they really did want to go back for Wild Dog, but they were basically told, no, we have to leave him. But that shows that they were bonding like Oliver wanted them to become a team, because they realized we have to go back for him, but we just can't. And that was a nice thing to see. Church, he seems to be all over the map sometimes with what he's doing. There doesn't seem to be any cohesive thoughts in what he's doing to the city. It's just more like chaos for chaos sake sometimes with that.
I don't know. I'm not sure if I agree with that, but I'll let you go on.
But I like the character. I'm not going to say that. I enjoy him. I almost wish that he was the big villain for this season as opposed to Prometheus, which who knows how that's going to work out. This episode seemed he did have some kind of plan, but as far as like overall, we don't see him really working to build the criminal empire he wants to do in the city from episode to episode, which would be a nicer thing to see.
Right. Okay. I got you. All right.
Yeah, that's all I meant. I mean, like, we know what it is, but we don't get to see it. We get to see other random things that tangentially may connect to it. I would like to actually see him taking more of the crime families and taking it apart and taking control.
I think a problem on a lot of these shows tends to be they feel they have to juggle a couple extra storylines all the time, and then certain ones don't get their just due or get a little bit of the short end of the stick. And unfortunately, those tend to be the storylines I think we agree they should do more with. And when it's one of these CW shows, there's always at least that one storyline like, I don't really care about this. You're taking up my time with it. And it's usually maybe it's a relationshipy kind of a thing or characters that don't really hold our interest very much. You know, whether it's Jimmy Olsen's on Supergirl or the relationship silliness that was going on with The Flash or this stuff. So I guess listening to you talk about it, yeah, if we could spend more time with the church stuff to really see, because he's, especially if you get an actor like that, he's having, I like the fact we're seeing, can we just point out, this is the first time I think we've seen that actor having fun in a role, and he's been great on The Wire, great for whatever limits he had, he was given on The Walking Dead, but neither of those roles were a lot of fun, I don't think. The fact that he seems to be, he's probably smiled more as a bad guy here than he did as a good guy on those two shows. But so I do enjoy, so the fact that we can enjoy the time we're spending with that character makes me think, yeah, show more about, you're right, like you're creating this criminal empire, or, you know, put him on Daredevil. Maybe he could do some good there. I don't know. Anyway, don't know why I said that. That was no reason for me to say that. Vicky, did you have any thoughts on all this?
I agree with, you know, the stuff that Cade was saying about the team. I don't know, Church, he freaks me out a lot. He's crazy. I don't know what else to say about it.
He's crazy.
Yeah, pretty much.
With his big brass knuckles. So, Daniel, did you have anything to say about the team themselves, or, you know, would it be Wild Dog or Ragman or anything else that really caught your eye in a good or a bad way?
I think Wild Dog's hopefully will be less wild after, you know, he spent an episode or two getting his ass beat. So hopefully that will take care of that potential problem in the future for us. Everything else, I'm pretty much on board with you guys. Except, you know, more Ragman is a good thing. So
I absolutely want more Ragman as much as possible. I loved even his little bit in this episode, and I really do like that actor. I don't know why, but I really like him. Since Jason's out here, let me get it out of the way now. I'm kind of hoping that this means they're going to kill off Wild Dog, because I'm like, yeah, I'm tired of you, and maybe that might help motivate John to rejoin the team, because I hear Spartan's got a new helmet designed for him, so he won't look as stupid as he did last year. And maybe we can then spend more time learning about the Evelyn character, who at least we got a little bit more of her, at least seeing her in action, so it wasn't quite as annoying as before. But I agree with what you were saying in the previous week. I still want us to spend more time with her than we have so far, you know? So we also had the flashback storyline, which I think is surprisingly still holding our interest, you know, at least for this show. This was kind of a nice parallel with the current plot, so I thought they did a nice job with that. They, you know, shenanigans and prisons and whatever. Other than revealing that apparently the Russian police don't seem to give a fuck about anything, are you guys still enjoying it? Did you enjoy what they did this week? Dan, I know you like Russian stuff, so what was your take on it so far?
Yes, comrade, it's been holding my interest. They're not overdoing it too much, which helps, and what they're doing seems to be working, and it's not quite, not quite the over-the-top, look how this ties into what I'm doing here. Look at how clever we are. We're fucking clever. I'm Speedweed. I'm the best.
We keep blaming Speedweed.
Well, I can remember the name of anybody else.
Yeah, like we can.
But it's cool. I'm definitely ready for Drago to show up. So I think it's kind of cool that they're just slowly moving us towards that. Because I mean, you know, we know sooner or later it's gonna be go time.
I think so, also one of the things that's helping it, and you correct me if I'm wrong, is this is a flashback story that we see what the plot of it's supposed to be. We understand what his motivation is and what we're trying to achieve here. Where sometimes we're like, why are we spending all this time in Hong Kong? He's just got to keep working for them until he's not, or that kind of crap. Here, there's a focus why he's there, what he wants to do. So we're just building up to how he gets to that point. So I think it becomes a more engaging storyline if we know there's a fucking reason for it. Where sometimes he's
I'm even kind of wondering if he's still like a member of Bratva, or if he like tore it up back then and they're not around anymore. But I could see them doing something where he's like, you know, actually kind of like still a member of them, and, you know, maybe I'll have to like go do some kind of mission type thing, huge one, but just something.
Well, I know that Dan watched the episodes that Scott, there was an episode in season one, I believe, where he has to go into, yes, like Russian mob in Star City and do the whole thing, and they're like, really? And then they believe him. So he's actually had used it before in the show. That was one of the reasons why I was excited that we were going to go back and get the story of it, where it happened.
Wow, I totally didn't remember that at all.
Yeah, I think when they went to Russia, and there was something with one of the guys, he was like, you have to do this for me. Other was saying, you do this for me, and this is the last thing I'll ask for you of you. So I don't know if that means he's out now or what.
Hmm. I guess that might be something we'll find out over the course of this season. I'm assuming. I mean, why else have this storyline there at all? All right. Is there anything else worthy of mention? The fact that Thea, is she still getting paid a full paycheck for this show? Because I keep thinking, it's so funny. You're an actress who I think has actually finally gotten a little bit better over the last year or two, and now they're barely using you at all. You know, maybe she can have a show with Jimmy Olsen somewhere, or the pointless characters. Except she's at least a little bit interesting to watch. But I'm not even bored by her because she's just hardly in it at all. I don't even understand what the point of her being here is anymore.
I don't think they do either.
Come on. Dan?
I prefer, you know, I don't mind them keeping her around, but I'm glad they're not like introducing some pointless storyline that we aren't going to care about for, you know. So I'm more than fine with them paying people that are credited a full paycheck, even if they don't show up for a couple of weeks, rather than jam some kind of just mediocre soap opera-ish in the worst possible way storyline that we just don't care about. So
I guess it doesn't hurt. I do agree that I don't want a stupid soap opera storyline. You're right. I don't need like the boyfriend crap that they did last season that no one cared about. It's like, oh, did they kill him? Oh, well. And even though I dread it because it's not like we got the writers of The Wire on the show or something, there is part of me that's going, hey, he's the mayor. I feel like there's more to be done there, but I keep thinking, yeah, but I bet they won't do it very well. So maybe they shouldn't. I'm kind of torn on that because there should be a lot more stories there, a lot more conflict or interest, but I don't know if they've got the writers or the actors to pull that off on a show like this, so maybe they shouldn't. I don't know. I'm troubled by it.
I've got one more thing before we move on, unless anybody has anything else to say about Arrow.
I don't.
Okay. I only took one note for the episode, and I just wrote it at the 8-minute mark. I think the new DA is Prometheus. You guys have any thoughts about that? After listening to him having some kind of speech, I just got the impression that, I don't know, that's what I came up with 8 minutes into the episode. So
that would be interesting.
Okay,
he's definitely got some edge to him.
I don't think he's Prometheus, but I wouldn't bet anything on that. But I don't think he is.
Well, I mean, these shows, I mean, name-wise, his name is actually the identity of another superhero that I think is supposed to show up on the show. I'm a little confused because, now I'll mention what I was referring to earlier. Remember, I think it was the very first episode this season when Felicity's got a screen up about all these other vigilantes that are running around town or have been reported. And one of the images, and it's not a photo, it's a drawing, actually. Like someone had described it to a police sketch artist or something. And the drawing looked pretty much exactly like the 80s character Vigilante, who I always remember was drawn on the cover by the great George Perez. Anyway. And Vigilante was Adrian Chase. But this guy that we're seeing, the DA, unless he's a better liar than anyone else on this show, because the show doesn't have very good liars, I don't get the impression he's currently running around as a superhero of any kind, because he seems to be kind of against the whole idea, unless he's just, again, a really good liar. So I'm a little confused by what they're doing there, if that makes any sense, because what they're doing doesn't make sense to me.
They could be putting it there as, like, fan service. For like, hey, fans of like, hey, here's that Vigilante mask. And then if he does become Vigilante, he looks completely different. That wouldn't surprise me if they did something like that.
Was Prometheus even in this? He wasn't in this episode at all, was he?
No, we didn't see him at all.
Okay, so
we haven't seen too much of him.
And And I think, I don't know if I confessed this in one of our previous podcasts, I think there was an episode where he appeared in, but apparently I think I might have dozed off for a minute or two, and I totally missed it. So when everyone else was talking about it, I was like, oh yeah, I was like, I didn't know Prometheus was in this episode. I just don't want to tell you because I already deleted the fucking episode.
Well, yeah, at this point, I don't even remember what he looks like anymore because we haven't seen that much of him. So
he kind of looks like Dr. Alchemy.
Oliver with the green air outfit with a dumb mask.
Kind of looks like Ragman and Dr. Alchemy had a baby. it's everyone looks like Kylo Ren on these shows now, apparently. Oh, I'm so stupid. Okay, so it sounds like we should get to the scoring for this episode, and I don't mean the music, I mean the actual grades. So, Vicky, what did you think of Arrow?
I will say 3.5.
You're so consistent today. Kaddish?
I'm giving it a 3 because of the stupid prison break storyline. Just dumb.
K doesn't like acid spray. Got it.
That works. Yeah.
Dan?
Yeah, that's what wore through his internet lines last week, so you can't blame him. I will give the episode a 3.5. I gave it an extra half a point because I enjoyed seeing Ragman like knock a hole in a wall and then deflect bullets. It was just cool enough for him, like, okay, I'm really enjoying this. So, more Ragman.
I love Ragman. I get rid of Arrow. Just make it Ragman. You know what? I'm actually, just because of that, I am also going to need to give it a 3.5. I'm not really putting a lot of thought into these grades. Anyway. Now, okay. So, I know that the last show on our docket was only watched by two of us. Dan, did you get a chance to watch last week's You Know What or not?
Yeah, I was able to watch Legends of Tomorrow's second episode. It doesn't matter what day I watched it. I don't know why I'm trying to remember.
I love that.
Yeah,
that's that's important to know. Did you watch it Monday? Did you watch it Sunday? Did you watch it Saturday?
Yeah.
let me officially say we're talking about Legends of Tomorrow now. Okay, now go on.
Yes. No, I enjoyed it. I didn't have a problem with the Nazi Hulk. I didn't think it was too too crazy. So, there was some fun stuff. The Martenstein being a shitty leader thing was definitely it wasn't a good plot. It wasn't organic at all. It just came in there and they just rammed it right down our throats. So, just like I listened to you guys talk about it this morning. So, I'm pretty much in the same same page as you guys when it comes to it. So I ended up giving it a 3.5. It's been so long since I watched it. I think I can't remember why I gave it a higher score than the premiere, but it came together for me nicely. So I think I'm definitely looking forward to whenever I get to watch.
I think Dan got zapped out of existence yet again. Ugh. Oh, those quantum mechanics.
Yep.
So, it'll just be Cade and I talking about Legends of Tomorrow, and we're talking about tonight's episode, which was Shogun. Sum it up pretty quickly here. Vixen stows away on the team's ship. Did I just say stows away? Stows away on the team's ship, certain that Rex Tyler's final words about a time traveler must mean that one of the quote-unquote legends is the murderer. She's eventually subdued by the newly superpowered Nate Haywood, who has discovered that the super serum that Ray tinkered with and injected him with has also given him, superpowers. But an accident occurs while testing out his new steel skin with Ray, and Nate ends up falling out of the Wave Rider, hurtling through, I guess, what do we call this? The time stream that they're traveling through? I'm not really clear.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, we'll just say that's what it is. Anyway, Ray goes out after him, and they somehow end up in 17th century feudal Japan, the era of the samurai and the shogun. Oh yeah, Dr. Stein and Jax stay on the Wave Rider to help fix it up, and they end up finding a secret compartment and a secret message as well. So, we've got a few things we can talk about here, Cade. So,
all right.
Let's just knock these out one right after the other. First of all, Nate Haywood, Steel. Okay, so were you excited that they went there, and he's like, really, Steel? They went like Colossus Steel on us with him?
I'm not so fond of the Colossus Steel skin, because in the comics, Steel doesn't look like that. But I am excited they gave him powers, and we did basically get the Citizen Steel character with Nate Haywood. The effects, it is like we now have Iron Man and Colossus aboard the ship, but I do like that he got powers. I
didn't think of that. Go on.
I can't be really mad because he did get the powers, but I think just making him all steel skin, because he just looks like Girder too. I mean, guys, you can't keep reusing that look. You could have tried something different with it and still gave him powers.
I had forgotten about the Girder thing, I guess. It didn't bother me. I mean, I wasn't expecting them to give him the, you know, the red shiny outfit that, you know, they didn't bother giving his grandpa. But I knew they had to do something to really signify this ability, that they weren't just going to make him like, oh, look, he's invulnerable and stuff breaks against his skin, because then, oh, look, he's Luke Cage. So they
That's went, true. Yeah.
They went the gun that running. And, hey, I'm all for them doing stuff with special effects on the show, because I if I'm tuning into Legends of Tomorrow, I want to see crazy effects. I want more of it. Not just flamey stuff. I'm tired of flame stuff. But
I will...
Go on.
It looks good. It looks good because he looks like himself still, even with his coating over his skin. The hair still has that look that his hair generally has.
Yeah, that's why.
So it was actually quite nicely done.
And he had expressions. So
yeah, it's different.
We'll see how it goes. But I for one was kind of excited because I really like that actor. I like that character being added to the show. I feel it's a good addition to the show. And I did think in this episode we started to get a little bit more of a delineation or separation between the kind of character he is compared to, say, Ray. I actually think, you know, switching over to Ray just for the moment, I can't believe I'm going to him that fast, but I kind of think they might have done a little bit better job at Ray this episode, or maybe they are all these lame arcs with him, and whether it be doubting himself or you're not a superhero without your outfit or all that crap. I felt they kind of brought it to the foreground here. Not foreground. What am I thinking?
The forefront.
Forefront. Thank you. Here with his character in a way that kind of made sense. And I'm kind of curious what they do in the next episode or two, because I'm assuming he's going to. Is he going to have to create another Atom suit all from scratch, or did he have an egg?
That's the good question, because the suit's gone. It is evaporated with whatever he did. So, yeah, well, or does he try to tinker with the serum again to give himself powers in a different way?
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you think they would somehow do something where he would try to incorporate some sort of with the, what is it, the white dwarf star thing, which helps him change size, I guess. Maybe he could do something where he could actually shrink on his own, perhaps.
Right. They actually could have a chance to kind of redo it and put him back to where he has the power to just shrink himself without the suit. That would be an interesting thing to see if they can do that.
Yeah. And maybe he can control bugs.
We'll see.
No, I'm just kidding. So, I kid. Adam came first. Everyone shut up. Another thing I think was really, really, really notable about this episode, and I know a certain fellow squad member should be excited when she does get a chance to watch this episode. I don't know if she's listening or kind of has her fingers in her ears right now. How how incredibly good was Sarah in this episode?
And phenomenal.
And I'm going to say that I think Sarah, let's talk about squandering someone. Sarah is often squandered on the show, as far as I'm concerned, which is weird to me because I think she's one of the she's definitely one of the more of the leads on the show, but they sometimes don't give her enough cool shit to do because she should be like the best fighter on the series. She is, but we need to see that in action. And the fact that she can fight in so many different ways, because, you know, she was trained with the League of Assassins. It's not just about, you know, punching people out. I thought she was so good in this episode. It was definitely one of the highlights of the whole episode, just watching her with the swords and what she can do. And that was actually well done. It wasn't shittily choreographed the way some stuff tends to be on this show and other shows as well. I really enjoyed that a lot.
No, it was nice to see that they are trying now. They're going to push her to have her actually have more things, show her for how tough she is and how badass she is. It's great that you can almost say, if Vixen stays around, the two toughest characters on this team or the two best fighters on this team are both women.
Yeah.
Like, if the team is in trouble in hand-to-hand combat, the women are the ones who are going to save them. That's pretty awesome that they've done this. And yeah, you're right. Sarah in this episode, she didn't have any like blah qualities like they have her. She wasn't flat. She had a personality. She was out there. The final fight with her and the Shogun's second in command was amazing. The way it played out.
Yep.
When you see her sliding, it's the knife she has and wasn't the sword. It's like, that's perfect. That's a very League of Assassins thing she did there.
Yep.
And it's beautiful. It was like, my rating for the show actually increased just because of, by the end, I saw how well they handled her in just this episode.
Right.
And I hope they don't backtrack on it, but I hope they keep going with how well they did.
I think ever since they've made her, they've pushed her into the role of being the leader, she really has. And I think that's actually worked really well for the show. It's worked so well that I do want to see Rip Hunter return. But I kind of want to see Rip Hunter return, but I still want her to be leading the team, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. I completely agree.
I want her to be the captain and Hunter to be like the Riker to her Picard. So
exactly.
If that makes any sense. Since we got more of her, obviously, in this one episode than when she was part of her previous team, the Vixen stuff, what did you think of how they handled that character since we got a heck of a lot more of her now than in the previous one?
I don't feel they've differentiated enough between the two of them, the two different Vixens. I don't think we really saw her personality show till, say, the end in the scene with Mick.
Yes.
Where she walks in and throws a throwing star in a sandwich. I just want you to have proof about ninjas. And she's that interaction there. I think Mick is going to be the character where we're going to get to see her bounce off of and see more of her personality. What we have seen is great. I'm glad they've added her to the cast, but I'm interested to see how much more we get to know about her, how she interacts with them. Cause with the way she interacts with Mick already, it's interesting. Her telling him, I see you can be the hero if you want to.
I would say that in this episode, although there was initial frustration I had with her character, because it seemed I get frustrated with characters who become so locked in one point of view or so stubborn that they can't see anything else. It's like the way I feel about people talking about politics nowadays, that they can't see another perspective. And her going around and just why she would assume, because Rex Tyler said time traveler, that it would have to have been one of them, when, as Sarah tells her later on, they told you that we're tracking someone. That's probably the person who did this, not one of us who just fought alongside you. I was a little frustrated by her stupidity there, I thought. However, I was happy that there was not a hint in this entire episode of anything potential between her and Rey, which was my concern last week. So I'm hoping that it looked like there was more of a possibility of something between her and Mick. And you know what? That would be, I would find that so fascinating and out of the blue. I would be intrigued by, because I couldn't imagine a character I would less expect to see hooking up with anyone on the show than Mick Rory. So
definitely agreed.
But And by the way, Mick Rory has been great in this episode. I really am still enjoying him, even without Leonard Snart for him to play off of. I think he's really come into his own. And maybe the one of the better decisions I made on the show was the whole idea that because he spent all that time with the Time Masters, it made him smarter. So I mean, he still says some silly things from time to time, but at least he's not an idiot.
Yeah, Mick 2.0 is one of the best decisions season one made, is having that story, because Mick version one that we had really added nothing, whereas he adds a lot to the show. He's the one who generally has the funniest lines of people. He also has a personality that plays off well against everyone else who is trying to be a hero, and Mick's just there trying to be Mick. And so I'm glad that they did that with that character, because, like, I couldn't imagine the first version of Mick and her have any interaction where I'd be entertained. But the two of them, and the throwing star scene again, the excitement on his face when he realizes what she threw at him, that she wasn't trying to kill him, she was giving him something to prove ninjas exist, was fantastic. That this is something he wants to be able to say, hey, I've seen ninjas, they're real. That's a nice little thing for him.
Yeah. Although the fact that it would be ninjas that she doesn't believe exist with all the things that she's already seen, not to mention you're a superhero on a team of superheroes, like characters like Obsidian and stuff, but ninjas you don't believe in? Okay. Anyway, moving on, because we're getting near the end here. We got to talk a little bit about Dr. Stein and Jax. Okay, so they find the secret compartment on the ship. So blah, blah, blah. Oh, look, there's guns. Who cares? They get that recording. They find a recording that was sent to Rip Hunter from the year 2056 or 46?
2056.
So 40 years from now, from our time. So therefore, and it's from Barry Allen, which means a couple things. Number one, Barry Allen lives another 40 years. So there's that, which I think is actually significant. So that means it's got to be like a Barry Allen who's in his mid-60s leaving this message. Like a Jay Garrick kind of Barry Allen. So obviously we don't get to know what that message is. How long do you think they're going to tease this out? Do you think it might pertain? Do you think it could pertain to either A, the crossover that's affecting all four shows in December? Or is it something that's only specific to this show? But then again, if it's Barry Allen, how can it only be specific to this show? I think it's way too early for us to really come up with any decent predictions. Maybe if Jason was here, he'd have one. I don't know. But I actually listened because we heard a little bit of the voice, and it did sound like, you know, it was Grant Gustin, but I don't know if he was just doing it himself or they did some sort of voice modulation on him to make him sound a little bit older, but that was definitely him. And I didn't expect it. So I kind of like that they're like, oh, I like when the show has been surprising me in the final moments, whether it be the killing of Our Man or this. So what did you think of that?
That was interesting. One thing what I first thought it could have been was a reference to the supervillains getting together. But if that was the case, there's no way they couldn't tell everybody. So I'm thinking it's something. It'd have to be something that has a big impact, but less severe or pertinent to what they're currently doing as to the only reason they don't tell anybody. Because their reaction doesn't seem like it's something horrific, because they don't respond and talk about it as if it's something horrific. But it definitely ties in. It's going to tie in, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's the crossover.
It's got to be something that why would it be something he would be told not to tell the team?
Right.
Because the only reason you don't tell the team something is if they either, A, it's something that they're going to want to deal with right then and there, or B, it's something they're going to want to try to prevent, which they can't. And Barry, maybe by the time he's in his mid-60s, has finally learned the lesson of not fucking around with time the way he didn't seem to do in his mid-20s. So, but, I mean, it could be something pertaining to the crossover. We've already heard what the crossover is going to loosely have to do with, which we'll deal with. Alien stuff, we'll just leave it at that. So I don't know. My first thought was okay, the only reason you don't tell the team is because maybe they have to sacrifice and you don't want to tell them that. I don't know. But then I was like, ah, haven't they done that already? I don't really have any predictions for it right now, but I do like it's something that we're going to be wondering about. I don't know how much they're going to be able to tease us with this in the coming episodes. I don't see how. I mean, unless we're going to keep having, like, Martin and Jax having, like, secret conversations. Do we tell them? I don't think we should tell them. No, I won't tell them. But it was something that was intriguing, if nothing else. And I do like they once again brought up the fact that, oh, they are going to still be looking for Rip Hunter, as well as, you know, the whoever it was who killed Our Man, which, you know, we know, right. At least we know who that is. One last silly thing before we the two of us wrap it up. While yes, it was cute that we got your Star Wars references with Yoda here. I mean, even though if I had a nickel for every movie or TV show that trotted out the do or not do, there is no try, I would just, you know, I wouldn't need a job anymore. However, the reference that we should all, you know, be smile at in this one was delivered by none other than Jax, when he says, if there's one thing I learned from watching Lost, yes. Is that you don't open secret hatches. And I went, oh, that's a funny line. That's memorable. That's it's not as good as Linda Carter's thing about the jet plane, but pretty close. So kudos to Jax at the funniest line of the episode.
There was one universe connection. I don't know if you caught it. The sword that is given to the daughter.
Yes, I did.
It's Katana sword. That's her family.
They repeat when he. I knew it when he asked the father
the to last
repeat
name.
His last name, and it's right. I think it's Yamashiro. That's yep. That's her. That's Katana's last name. So
I liked that. That was a nice little. I mean, the minute he passes the sword to the daughter when Nate gives her the sword back, I'm like, oh, I know where this is going. But then they further emphasize it in case someone didn't. That was a nice little thing for all those people to realize, oh, we'd know where that sword ends up at some point.
Right. Yeah. I have to say, going into this episode, I had beyond zero expectations. I found the ads for it were kind of meh. I was like, really? They're just going to be in, you know, ancient Japan or something? I didn't see anything intriguing about this episode at all. I really enjoyed this episode.
I was surprised.
I was shocked by how much I liked it. Because I thought I was going to get like a letdown after, you know, seeing the Justice Society of America. And I got to say, as far as like an overall episode, I don't have my grade for last week in front of me.
Oh, I know what it is. We talked about it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We adjusted both our grades to actually come together and have the same grade at some point.
Oh, I should have mentioned that. That's right. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think I gave the episode a higher grade on our podcast and then I lowered it afterwards.
I think you gave it a 3.5. I didn't want to give it that. And I think we both ended up at a 3 because we discussed it and convinced each other to raise my grade, lower yours.
Oh, I thought I gave it a 4 and I lowered it to a 3.
Now. Oh, you're right. I gave it a 3. You gave it a 4. We ended up getting to 3.5 for both of us.
Yes.
You sold me on some good points and I brought you just pointed out some bad points. Yeah, and we kind of adjusted our grades.
That's exactly what happened. This is the fun, boring, geeky stuff you people miss by not being involved in our private conversations. Thank your lucky stars. So this week, what would you be giving this episode?
I'm giving this episode a 4. This is...
Guess what?
Really solid episode.
I'm giving it a 4 also. Yeah. I when I watched it, I said, I can't believe it. I think I like this more than Supergirl, which means I think I like this more than anything else this week. I never expected to like a Legends of Tomorrow episode the most of the 4, especially this one. Hey, they pulled it off. Hey, next week I might hate it, but this week...
I even told you last night when we were talking, I was like, yep, I'm waiting for the Legends letdown, and it didn't happen. Okay. I came out of that episode so happy. I'm hoping they found their rhythm and what they want to do and can keep doing that from here.
I feel like there's definitely so much potential now because I really like the way the team is gelling. I mean, the less annoying Ray is, the better. He wasn't really as annoying in this episode. We'll see about Vixen. I, other than her being irritating in the early part of the episode, I did like her for the rest of the episode. I definitely like the actress and the way she can interact with the team more than Kendra. She can do more also.
Right.
And I love the little animated vixen-y effects. Although I do want to see her do more stuff. I mean, like, I want to see her fly because she should be able to fly and do the and all yep. that kind of stuff. I'm assuming we will get to see that. And you know, we know we're gonna see plenty of different guest stars still on the show. Some I know one or two. I like the fact I don't know anything else. So who knows? And the fact that the villains are gonna be like grouping our favorite fun villains from the other shows is not a bad thing.
No, indeed. You
know? We like Reverse Flash a lot. We like Damian Darhk. We just didn't think he was right on Arrow. He's right on this.
He's perfect here. This is where Damian Darhk makes sense to me.
Yeah, he's having an immortal, you know, or a semi-immortal who can be around all these different time periods. Well, that makes sense if you're dealing with a show with a super team that's flying through time. That makes perfect sense.
And the better fact is their Damian Darhk is a better Vandal Savage than their Vandal Savage was.
You know what? Don't even get me started because I was planning to counter Dan's opinions about the Mirror Master, and I was thinking about Flash's villains in general and about how most of Flash's villains are basically, they're just glorified robbers with gimmicks or powers, which is fine because that's who he should be fighting. He's not fighting people trying to rule the world or who are just, you know, want to just are serial killers or whatever. And then you have your few exceptions. You have your Reverse Flash, who's got his psychotic weird exception, or Grodd, who actually does want to probably rule the world or something. But I was also remembering that, especially if you go back to the 60s and early 70s, the one comic that he appeared in all the time was Vandal Savage. Vandal Savage was sort of a Flash villain, as far as I was concerned. I still think of him as being a Flash villain more than anything else. And he was Vandal Savage was always a very interesting, a very brutal character. And I just don't think they captured that well the previous season. Darhk's a little bit closer. He's still not quite there. You know what, guys, go back and look at the old Justice League cartoons from, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
They did Vandal Savage there, and they got it right. There's your blueprint. Go for it. It's not that hard. You could have done such a better job. Anyway, I digress. We didn't want to spend that much time on the show. Let's wrap it up. We've wrapped up Legends, so that's the official end of that chapter. So that's a note for me to put that on the little time thing I do. And now we back to the wrapping up the show itself. If you enjoyed this podcast, you would also enjoy checking out our Facebook page. You can like the page and join the conversation there. We're the Serious TV Drama Podcast. That is how you can find us on iTunes as well. Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed. You can also rate and review us there. Every rating and review is appreciated, except for the one-star types. Those, not so much. And finally, you can also follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle there is at STVD Podcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. You know, we tweet from time to time. Not as much as we should, but, you know, we're busy. But every once in a while, we might send out a treat. So that's why you should follow us. I know there's something else that should be said here. Is a certain person still with us? Did she take her fingers out of her ears? There she is.
Yes, I'm here. I want to add that we are... our podcast is being featured on PopCultHQ.com, so go and check us out there.
Say that one more time. It's PopCultHQ, is that what it is?
Yes, .com.
I'm writing it down like I've never heard of it before. PopCultHQ. So cult, not culture.
Okay, no, cult. I'm a writer now for the site, and so... I need to share our podcast with everyone.
Yeah, really, because we need to like double our listeners from like, you know, 2 to 4. Anyway, so with all that said, I think we can wrap this sucker up. So again, thanks to you two for being able to join us. Thanks to Dan, who got zapped out of existence, but, you know, at least he was able to be a trooper and do it via phone this week. And we hope that Jason is able to join us next week. We okay. We should do an homage to Jason right now and remind everybody that this was episode number.
I have no idea.
You suck. It's episode. I believe this is episode 143.
I'll check. I didn't know I was going to do that. I don't do that episode business. That's not my thing.
It's episode. I'm sure it's 143. It's got to be 143. It's 143.
We'll just say 143. It's 140. If it's not, Jason will correct us next week.
If it's not 143, no one really cares. And with that said, much like every podcast should end with someone saying, no one really cares. Good night to you guys, and good night to everyone out there.
Good night. Good
night.
Oh, you people.
He's the monarch of motion, the sultan of speed, the wizard of whizzle, yes indeed. Go from here to China in a no time flat, beat the speed of light and you can't beat that. The Flash,
the Flash, the Flash,
meet the mighty Flash. In a fight he'll smash and crash, smash a whole gang of crooks or schnooks. Hey, he'll just clobber any kind of bad guy, thief or robber, the world's fastest human. Yeah, man, the Flash,
the unbeatable Flash, the unbeatable Flash.
His real name, works with the police, justice is his aim, wears a ring with the Flash's uniform in it. When danger threatens, he'll switch in a minute. The Flash,
the Flash,
meet the mighty Flash.